There's the big board, the 20 electoral votes from the state of Pennsylvania. We just got new metrics in.
The inauguration of a president celebrates a peaceful transition of power engineered by the American voters.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome to the 45th podcast. This is Rabia Chaudhry. I'm an attorney and an author, and I'm here with my co-host, Susan Simpson. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Rabia. So last time we left off with the episode, we were talking about the shutdown, which ended approximately 12 hours after we recorded.
Yeah, sorry about that.
I mean, there's mixed feelings. Robbie, what'd you think about that?
The fact that it ended? I mean, yeah. I'm glad that it ended. I think, you know, it was detrimental to a lot of people who are, you know, they need their paychecks. They need to go to work. They don't want to be furloughed. And I'm glad that they came to something. I mean, it shows me that at least something's going on. But yeah, it's all theatrics and it's just a big game right now. But it was interesting. So, you know, that was all kind of, it was all about the immigration stuff, right? And remember I said last week, Trump is suddenly going to just tweet something out to just end the whole debate. He didn't do exactly that, but he did release a one-page memo on immigration that he's just like, this is what I want, boom. And that was the end of that. And we'll get to that later today. What did you think about that, the whole shutdown?
I think it was probably the best that could have happened for now. I mean, the Democrats are not going to win this fight in the shutdown. I think the shutdown wasn't really a strategy from any side. It was a sort of an artifact of the fact that everyone was either misunderstanding or misrepresenting others' positions. Like, okay, if Trump and his cronies had been upfront from the beginning, they were not actually going to do DACA, there'd be no shutdown over it. Democrats thought that Trump wanted DACA because he was saying it over and over again. So they pushed
for it. But see, I still disagree with you. I still do think Trump wants DACA.
He kind of does. He does now. His latest statements are, Amnesty Don, according to Breitbart. That we could have shutdown again because, again, it seems like the powers that be in the White House don't actually want it. But Trump keeps saying he does. So Democrats keep being like, okay, well, he says he wants it. So let's push for it. Whereas if everyone was clear about their intentions, you could avoid it.
Well, that doesn't happen in politics or playing a game. But you know what? I'm glad it came and went. And because, you know, terrible things were happening. Like the White House had their outgoing message saying, unfortunately, we cannot answer your call today. So because congressional Democrats are holding government funding.
Yeah, what's funny, though, was back in 2013 during the last shutdown, Trump was tweeting praise for the Republicans for like linking health insurance to the shutdown and not backing down. And now he's all, how dare the Democrats link a, what's his phrase, unrelated topic like immigration to the shutdown. But yeah, so I think for me, I guess the one win that cannot be missed here is to make sure the Republicans are forced to go on the record and say what they're trying to do. A lot of them, their goal is to end DACA without admitting they're doing it and if possible to blame Democrats for it.
But here's the thing, though, Susan. I think the reason the Republicans, one of the reasons they can't say what it is because they have been waiting for Trump to give them a consistent signal, right? Too. He keeps flip-flopping, and they're like, what does the president want? Yeah. And how can we align ourselves with that and still get all the things that we think are really important. I really think before the era of Trump and his campaign, there was really broad political consensus on DACA.
If there was, they would have passed something.
Well, there were other things going on, but yeah. I mean, I feel like, I don't know. Maybe they would have, I don't know, but
I think they don't want it. And it's just too popular for them to admit it. It's far too popular for them to come out and say what they really want.
Well, since we're talking about it, let's just go over this memo then, okay? How about we just talk about this, what this memo is?
So the latest iteration of the White House's position.
A one-pager. This guy is simple. He keeps it simple. And Stephen Miller did a briefing, and I heard it went great. But this is basically what they're saying. They are saying that Trump wants to, well, this is interesting, not just extend DACA, that he is willing to give a 10 to 12-year path to citizenship for not just the existing DACA enrollees, which are about 700,000 people, but also other DACA-eligible immigrants. And they estimate it'll be about 1.8 million people. So, meaning you give us, you know, what we want, and we are willing to create a path to citizenship or support a path to citizenship, you know, long path, but it's a path. And in the meantime, those people would be able to stay here, work, have work authorization, travel, which is really the important stuff. But here's what they want. And this is why... not everybody's very happy about it. What they want is this. They want, first of all, $25 billion trust fund for the border wall system.
It keeps going up.
Well, yeah, $25 billion. But that's actually not what's pissing. I don't think that's what's pissing off Democrats the most. I think what's pissing them off is this. Number one, they want to end family reunification visas. Now, they're calling it chain migration. I will not call it that because that's not what it was ever known as. And family reunification is basically that citizens can sponsor their parents and siblings. Okay. So think about this. It takes you 10, 12, 15 years to become a citizen, and then maybe you sponsor your parents, maybe they're elderly, or your siblings. Takes them literally, siblings take 10 to 12 years to get their visas, and they want to cut those out, and that would cut down that category of green cards by like 36%, so it's pretty big. And they also want to really, really ramp up deportations, including expedited removal, which means the person doesn't even get a hearing. So it says if you have a visa overstay, which, by the way, of all the immigration violations, a visa overstay is like the least serious one, you know. So they're not looking at criminals here. They're just looking at somebody who's like, oops, my visa expired 10 days ago. But they want to do expedited removal, no hearing, catch, and send them out. They also want to completely eliminate the diversity visa lottery system, which I just think is the weirdest and dumbest ask. It's such a drop in the bucket, and it's not linked to like any kind of major issue in the country, drugs or crime or anything. I don't know why he is obsessed with the diversity laws. But I
because
feel like
he thinks that it works by the fact that other countries get to choose who goes in the lottery. For some reason, I don't know how the hell he made this mistake.
You know what I also think, Susan? I think it has, because it has the word diversity in it.
it probably does. Our lottery, and lotteries, like, we should choose on merit. But he really, like, at least 15 times now, he has given the same damn totally wrong, embarrassingly wrong answer, and no one ever calls him on it. Like, interviews, he keeps saying it, and no one's like, oh, by the way, you're totally fucking wrong there. They're like, oh, very interesting. That's very interesting, sir.
Yeah. So the reaction by the way, the advocates of Dreamers and Democratic leadership was not great. A couple of the responses are this. Nancy Pelosi tweeted that the proposals are part of an unmistakable campaign to make America white again. Another Democratic lawmaker said $25 billion ransom for Dreamers with cuts to legal immigration and increases deportation doesn't pass the laugh test. And, you know, similar responses. And he's not getting a lot of support from his base either. They're not happy. They're like, what? You want to give 1.8 million DACA folks citizenship?
That's the other part. So there's some proposals have had, a lot of them, but there have been proposals to somehow make a DACA recipient exception where they can stay here or have work permissions, but not be made citizens. It seems like even the most hardcore of like the pro-white brigade in Congress is not huge on this, though. They see that it's a terrible idea to have a permanent underclass that can't get citizenship. So they don't seem keen on that either. They seem more in favor of having a slow roll, 10 to 12 year citizenship path. Although there's still questions of whether people, it would be limited to DACA recipients, those people actually applied to DACA and have it, or to the broader class of Dreamers, including those who hadn't applied to it or otherwise aren't currently under DACA, but were childhood arrivals.
Right. Well, I mean, his plan seems to suggest he's open to including all of them, people who haven't applied. I mean, 1 million people on top of the people who have already applied. Let me ask you this. So when I saw some of the Democratic responses, this is what I'm thinking. Okay, if you think this through, losing those categories, right? Like I said, diversity visa, it's a drop in the bucket. So I don't think it's a huge loss if it's a temporary loss. And the other thing is the family immigration, right? If you add 1.8 million people to, they become citizens, right? They become citizens. That means if they marry people from overseas, those people become citizens. If they have children, they will be citizens. Well, if they have kids here, they're citizens anyways. But you're adding more citizens of color to the country. You're adding more voters who are, you know, who can potentially help roll these things back permanently. I don't know. I feel like, to me, that's one reason people don't want to make them citizens, because they don't want more voters who are like, brown voters. So I feel like, you know, it might be something worth giving up for a temporary, because again, this is not like it's going to be written in stone. These laws can be changed.
But it would hurt our economy too. Like, we actually need immigrants. We desperately need them. Yeah. The economy depends on them being here. So it's not even just like a long game to help immigrants. It's our actual economy depends on this not happening.
This is how I would strategize about this if I could, okay? I would say, let's make a deal. Let's do this. Let's give them the path to citizenship. Because once that becomes codified, once that becomes, like, you know, like part of the statutory, you know, allowance of how these people can, like, there's no way a court was not going to overturn it. Those people are set once they apply. And so that happens, right? And then let's say we're able to swing the election next time. The minute you swing the election, you can, like, reverse the family stuff and the diversity stuff.
But not for 12 years.
No, why? No, yes, you can. The citizenship, you absolutely can.
It'd be a 12-year path to citizenship. People in DACA today would not be citizens for 12 years. 10 to 12 years.
That wouldn't have happened anyways. That's actually, I don't think it's the 10 to 12 year thing.
Yeah. As somebody no. They're saying after, like, say they pass this plan tomorrow, it'd be 10 years before they're eligible to vote.
No, you're not understanding what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. I'm saying forget them. Forget that. I know they're not going to vote for 10 years, right? Number one, 10 years is not that, for a lot of these people, they're willing to wait the 10 years. They when DACA opened up, there was absolutely no idea how long it was going to be before they could apply. Because remember, they don't even have green cards yet. They just have these temporary passes. So this is what I expected. I expected they're going to end up being DACA recipients for 4 to 6 years. Every 2 years, you renew it. Then they'll become green card holders for maybe 5 years. Then they would apply for, it was going to be 10 years anyways. What I'm saying is this, if they say, yes, let's do it, make us a deal, pass this into law, and all these people come out of the shadows, they file their applications, okay? Because the government has promised, we will allow you to do this, and there's a path to citizenship available. They can't really roll back that path, but what they could roll back, if we're able to, I say we, if we're able to change the administration in a few years, the other two provisions, the diversity lottery, we don't need to wait the 10 years for those voters. You see what I'm saying? If we can get a Democratic president, he can, on day one, say, I am, by executive order, once again allowing family reunification visas. There you go.
But that's a big risk at the same time. Again, they want to cut immigration on the whole by 50% for some of them. And that would be devastating to the economy. Like, we won't be able to wait for, like, the goal is to avoid any harm here as much as possible. And I'm not, I don't think there's an inherent, like, correct value of quote-unquote merit-based visas versus diversity lottery or family reunification. So I don't think it'd be – I wouldn't be opposed to sort of like readjusting ratios. Where I think the hard line is to be is not agreeing to these ridiculous reductions in immigration overall.
I mean, Congress could be it could go blue in the next – you know, like we could have enough Democrats in Congress in the next year or two where they could also be like, okay, but now we've decided to – to do immigration reform, and in that we're gonna re-include family. I just think they could pull one over on this guy.
Can't wait for tomorrow, not right now.
I don't know. I think it's a risk worth taking, and I'll tell you why. It's 2 million people now versus somebody who's gonna apply for their parent or sibling who's not gonna get here for 10 years anyways, or the parent might get here in a few years. I think they should do it just to secure the future of the 1.8 million who are here, who have been here for a long time. And then the other folks who are not even here, there is no reason that's not a wall that can't be deconstructed. Those pathways can open again. That's where I stand on this, but that's not the popular opinion. So
I just think it's just the harm is too much to risk at this point to the economy. I mean, look at like Japan. That's like the direction they want to head us in, where you have a very aging workforce with no influx of actual younger workers. I mean, it would be economic destruction.
If you're going to talk about who's coming in, okay, the 50,000 people in the diversity lottery, yeah, they might be actual able-bodied workers. The siblings who can no longer come in, they can't come in for 10 years anyway. Somebody applies.
Oh, I don't care. I'm just saying the total numbers.
Right.
Whatever visa they're using, whatever kind it is, I don't care about that so much as I do about total numbers.
Well, we'd be adding all the dreamers. We'd be adding all of them to
they're already here, though. That's not going to help the economy in the future.
No.
I mean, we'll help, but
that would add. That is going to absolutely add to the tax revenues of the United States. I mean, like, to have more people come forward and be able to pay taxes. There's at least...
Yeah, it will, but well...
But I see what you're saying. I still would take the risk. Anyway, and then I would pull one over. I would secretly pull one over on this president by aiming for comprehensive immigration reform after we take Congress. All right. Moving along.
And hopefully not build that, in the words of the former Mexican president, fucking wall.
There's the wall. We didn't even talk about the wall. It's not even a wall anymore. You know what they're calling it?
No one wants to build the wall.
Let me see. It's not even the wall. It is called a border wall system. See, it's evolving. It's evolving. All right, let's move on from immigration. Every business needs great people and a better way to find them. So if you're hiring, well, we've got something that's much better for you than just posting your job online and just praying for the right people to see it.
ZipRecruiter knows that there's a smarter way. So they built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you.
They learn what you're looking for, they identify people with the right experience, and they invite them to apply to your job.
These invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. It's not just putting an ad in Craigslist and hoping for the best.
Right. Imagine that. Like, people are getting invitations to apply for your job. And well, that's why 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter actually get a quality candidate through the site in a single day, 24 hours.
And ZipRecruiter doesn't just stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applicants for you. So you don't miss a great match, and you're not spending too much time sorting through all the applicants you get.
The right candidates are out there, and ZipRecruiter is how you find them. And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free.
Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/45. That's ZipRecruiter.com/45. ZipRecruiter.com/45.
ZipRecruiter.com/45. ZipRecruiter, it is the smartest way to hire. A couple of big stories happened this week. First of all, Trump is in Switzerland. He's been dying to get there for a while. And then we also have a huge New York Times scoop. Which one should we talk about first?
Let's talk about Davos. Davos?
Davos. I honestly don't know. I don't know, and I don't care. But basically, it's the World Economic
Forum.
We
also had a debate yesterday whether or not Davos is based or inspired the name of Bravos in right. Game of Thrones. I don't think we ever concluded anything, though.
Right. I didn't even know that we were talking. I watched Game of Thrones and I forgot all about that. But yeah, I think actually it makes total sense. None of it's a coincidence. So what is this? What is the World Economic Forum? Well, it's been ongoing since 1971. It is a global political mover and shaker get together. About 2,500 people come together, not just political leaders, but also business people, people with a lot of money. And it's held annually in this town of Davos, whatever it is, in Switzerland, which apparently it's the highest most town in Europe. So it's really pretty, a lot of skiing. Their mission statement says that it's committed to improving the state of the world by engaging business, political, academic, and other leaders of society to shape global, regional, and industry agendas. And basically it's, you know, speeches, seminars, parties, discussions, private meetings, secret meetings, deals being made, public stuff. But
it's the dreaded global elite.
It is. It's how they decide the global agenda every year. One of my friends is there right now, and she's going to be in town on Wednesday at my house having dinner. So I'm going to ask her how it went. I'm excited to see her because it's the first time I don't know anybody else who's ever been. So, and actually, Trump is the first sitting U.S. president to actually go there and speak in over 20 years. So that's kind of a big deal.
And he did speak there. It was.
What'd you think about it?
I didn't watch all of it. I did watch the part where he said fake news and got booed.
Right. That wasn't during his actual. That was like another like another interview or something. Yeah, he criticized the media in some interview and responded to a question, I think, and he got booed, which he deserved. But the actual speech that he gave like a 25-minute speech, and you know what? He did not make an ass of himself. And that makes me happy. At least we didn't have to be completely embarrassed by our president. It wasn't too bad.
He craves their approval so much. It's when he wanted to do right. Like he wants to be loved by them more than just about anything else. Even more than wants the media to love him. Because these folks, he was nothing before this. He was just another American millionaire whose ideas they did not care for and did not want to hear from.
And didn't you tell me, are you the one who told me that he's been wanting to go forever? He could never get, because just by invite, basically.
Yeah, he's not been cool enough to make the cut before now. But now as president, he kind of has to.
We are all held hostage, all of Davos. All right, so a few of the things he talked about. He did very much tout his economic success in the first year of his presidency. And one of an interesting point he made was that the African-American unemployment rate is the lowest it has ever been in the United States.
I've been busy all day today. Okay. Why did Trump start off the day fighting with Jay-Z? I saw the tweet and I'm like, girlfriend. I don't understand what happened or where this came from.
Jay-Z, I can't remember what show he was on. And I want to know, why did Trump even see this? How did it cross his radar? But Jay-Z said something about, you know, he basically that he thinks Trump is racist and he's not good about, you know, he doesn't care about black people, basically. And this is the truth. And so Trump tweets out, somebody, please inform Jay-Z that because of my policies, black unemployment has just been reported to be the lowest rate ever recorded. He said that twice.
God, it's so infuriating because it's just like the whole, it's like the definition of like born on third base, thinks you hit a triple. Like you became president after 8 years of growth under another president who got us from a really bad place to a really good place. And now it's still kind of ticking up. But also that unemployment rate has slowed its decrease since you came into the office.
It has slowed its decrease. But since 2010, the unemployment rate has been steadily decreasing, 1% a year. I mean, it's just, this has been the trend, but you're right. It's gotten a little bit slower under Trump. But yeah, he fought with Jay-Z. I think he actually but tweeted
notice,
that while he was in
notice who he didn't fight with? Eminem.
Oh, he didn't. That's true. He didn't pick a fight with a white guy. That's true.
That's so Eminem strange. Why? How does he choose which rappers he gets into like a Twitter beef with?
You know, he's got to put some folks in their place, if you know what I'm talking about. And, you know, one thing I want to ask is, you know, he says policies. I still am convinced he doesn't know what that word means. But give us one specific policy that you think lowered the unemployment rate.
What have you done that actually contributed to this system right here that caused this result?
Maybe the policy is that we didn't destroy stuff yet, not everything. And so, anyway.
I guess he gets credit for not totally destroying the whole financial system yet. I mean, he could have. So I'll give him like what, a C for not doing that yet?
I'll give him a D plus. he also talked about denuking Korea, and that doesn't sound the way it should. But basically, you know, preventing North Korea from becoming a nuclear power, talk about Iran a bit. He had one beautiful paragraph that definitely was not written by him where he goes, by the way, the theme this year at Davos was like coming together in a fractured world. And, you know, that makes total sense for Trump. So this was his nod to the theme. He goes, we must invest in our people. When people are forgotten, the world becomes fractured. Only by hearing and responding to the voices of the forgotten can we create a bright future that is truly shared by all, says the man who wants to ban refugees. The nation's greatness is more than the sum of its production, and a nation's greatness is the sum of its citizens, the values, pride, love, devotion, and character of the people who call that nation home. Tear of pride. Now, mostly, though, most of his talk was actually about trying to make deals for America. He wanted to woo business to America. So let's listen to a little clip of him trying to do that.
America is roaring back, and now is the time to invest in the future of America. We have dramatically cut taxes to make America competitive. We are eliminating burdensome regulations at a record pace. We are reforming the bureaucracy to make it lean, responsive, and accountable, and we are ensuring our laws are enforced fairly. We have the best colleges and universities in the world, and we have the best workers in the world. Energy is abundant and affordable. There has never been a better time to do business in America.
Now, he did that, and he actually had a lot of meetings with all kinds of leaders, but the New York Times is reporting that while he did his best to, woo business there, but it seems that China came out on top in terms of striking deals and being actually really, fetting people, you know, is it fetting people? I don't know. I think that's a word, right?
What are you trying to say?
But anyhow, I'm trying to say that China was very successful in, like, coming to, like, some real serious deals. And and one of their best attended speeches was a member of China's ruling Politburo, Liu He. His name is Liu He. He promoted something called the Belt and Road Initiative. And basically, the participants were saying that the Chinese initiative was rivaling. I mean, it was basically, you know, America has to look out because the Chinese initiatives right now are the greatest threat to American-led international institutions. He also, apparently there's a senior Chinese diplomat that introduced the Prime Minister of Pakistan. I don't know if anybody knows, but Pakistan, which is my country of birth, is half owned by the Chinese already. and they're also still rapidly expanding. The president of Brazil welcomed an offer from Beijing for Latin American nations to work closely with the Chinese initiative. Which was, by the way, this Belt and Road. So, yeah, China was making deals left and right.
China is, I mean, this is, I bet in the future we'll look back and be like, yeah, Trump's election was a time that China started in the path of ascendancy. I mean, America's already on the decline. This is sealed. Our position will no longer in the future be world's number one. And China's definitely on the path to try and replace us as being the new unipolar world power.
I mean, China is investing billions across the world. I mean, the Middle East, Europe, South Asia, Africa. And at this summit, they promised hundreds of billions of dollars more in investment in infrastructure all across these regions. So, and even in the United States, right? Aren't there like, don't we owe a lot of money to China? Aren't we? They've got a whole lot of loans and stuff against us. So anyway, yeah, China came up on top. They were the stars. Trump tried, but... China took the Oscars. So that's it for me. That's what I've got for this, for the 63rd week of the Trump presidency. It's been 63 weeks, Susan.
Since he was elected.
Since he's elected.
God, yeah. It didn't feel like that long. And it also feels like 10 times longer.
So somebody tweeted, I saw a tweet earlier last week, which I thought was hilarious, who said, I can't believe it's already been like 1,000 years since Trump's been elected, or it's only been 1,000 years. I don't know. Either way, it was funny.
My entire life. Feels.
Take us to Russia, Susan.
To Russia. Okay, let's see. So the other big news of the week is, once again, who did Trump fire, or in this case, try to fire? And it turns out it was Mueller back in June. Not really a surprise. It's not like everyone's like, oh my God, he tried to fire Mueller. It's more like, so it's totally confirmed. We know for a fact he did it, and they lied for like 6 months saying they didn't. And
I remember us on the show, and I remember I asked a number of times, how come he hasn't fired Mueller? But I guess he tried.
He did. He did kind of fire Mueller. He ordered Mueller's firing, but nothing happened because McGahn, the White House counsel, apparently realized that it's not just Trump who would be in danger of obstruction of justice for doing that. He would be too if he was part of that chain. So McGahn. I hate names. He's been promoted as like the hero lately in this news cycle because he did not fire Mueller. But keep in mind, McGahn's the one who tried to stop Sessions from accusing himself. If anything, this is just a sign that he is self-aware enough to know how to CYA. But what's also fascinating is that he was able to stop Trump from firing Mueller by simply not doing it. Once Trump gave the order and the order wasn't followed, Trump just kind of gave up. He's like, okay, well, I guess I can't do it myself, so...
Well, can you explain how he tried to do it? Like, who was the directive issued towards? Was it towards Jeff Sessions? Sessions has recused himself. Who can fire the special prosecutor? Let's talk about this.
Yeah, so what happened apparently is that Trump told McGahn to tell the DOJ to get things in motion. Or as he put it, I think, my guys. Tell my guys over DOJ to get Mueller fired. McGahn never passed on that message. Absolutely, Trump and McGahn cannot do it themselves. So Mueller is special counsel, and under the special counsel regulations, there are only certain circumstances which he can be fired. Per the regs, special counsel may be disciplined or removed from office only by the personal action of the attorney general. The attorney general may remove special counsel for misconduct, dereliction of duty, incapacity, conflict of interest, or for other good cause, including violation of departmental policies. The Attorney General shall inform the special counsel in writing of the specific reason for his or her removal. Now, in this case, wherever it says Attorney General, you'd replace that with Acting Attorney General, because Jeff Sessions recused himself. So,
yeah, so Rod Rosenstein.
Yeah. So he's the one, for purposes of this investigation, that make the call to fire Mueller, which is assuming, of course, that Trump doesn't fire him and keep firing other attorneys until he finds someone who is willing to go ahead and do the dirty work. But whoever it is, whoever actually does the whole firing act and says, Mueller, you're fired, they have to explain the reasons in writing. They can't just like say, Mueller, get out of here, call it a day. Yeah, we had our reasons, just whatever. They have to actually explain why they did it. Now, for some of the possible reasons, it's hard, you know, barring some development, it's hard to see how to apply here, like dereliction of duty or capacity. That's not going to fly. Mueller is a very experienced, very capable attorney who knows what he's doing, and that's not going to be why he gets kicked off the case. That leaves us with misconduct or conflict of interest. And Trump has been trying to set the stage for both of those.
Oh, you know what? I was wondering what this stuff was about. The golf fees? I didn't understand, but okay. Walk us through this, Susan.
Yeah, so there's sort of three main arguments he advanced back in June when he was first trying to fire Mueller. The first was that he and Mueller had been in a dispute over club fees at the Trump National Golf Club in Sterling, Virginia. So it's not totally clear yet what went on. What we know is that, like, in 2011... Mueller had been a member of this golf club, and then he resigned. Some of the stories that have come out, it seems that what happened is after he resigned, he wrote a letter asking for, like, some of his prepaid fees to be refunded. The club never responded, never gave money back, and that's just
that's
how...
Trump.
That's it. It just ended. That was it. What I'm sure happened is Trump, trying to desperately fire Mueller, went through all his records, found out he'd be part of the club at one point, pulled up his entire, like, club membership file, and found this letter saying, "Hi, I... get some money back now, I'm leaving," and decided that was going to be their source of conflict. But it's not going to be, because that doesn't work at all.
it doesn't rise to the seriousness because there wasn't a conflict.
It's not a conflict. Yeah. There's no conflict to be a conflict. It also was 2011, and also it's ridiculous. So their second round here for conflict was to claim that Mueller could not be impartial because he had recently been in a private law firm that had previously represented Jared Kushner. But that's also not a conflict. They've done, they had legal ethics attorneys look at it. There's just no conflict there under legal rules. So the final reason he was trying to argue that Mueller was conflicted and therefore could be fired is that Mueller had been interviewed by Trump to be the replacement FBI director the day before he got appointed as special counsel, which I'm not quite sure how that could even be a conflict.
What the theory is there.
Yeah. Like, okay. He hadn't
Or is
been,
it that he didn't get the job? No, well, okay.
No decision made. There hadn't been a decision one way or another.
Okay.
Now, it would be really interesting, and hopefully this did not happen. I'm assuming it didn't. Our Mueller would not have accepted, I don't think. Hopefully in that interview, Trump didn't say, "Now, Mueller, if you could be my FBI director, I expect loyalty. I demand loyalty." Or otherwise try and, like, preemptively obstruct justice before he was hired special counsel. Because then he'd be a fact witness. But... presumably that didn't happen here.
Yeah, I'm guessing he would not have accepted the appointment if that had happened. Yeah.
So that brings us, that's the conflict theories. And so far they're all nothing burgers, not going to happen.
The misconduct stuff is fun.
Yeah. And they're kind of all over the place here. I'm sure I have missed some of my list of what they've tried to argue so far. And they haven't even made or explicitly articulated all these arguments yet. But one area of misconduct they brought up has to do with the GSA emails. Now, this has kind of been forgotten a bit. It was a story a few weeks back. Basically, and it's important to remember, too, during all this, all investigations, we have three entities we're dealing with. We have the Trump campaign, the Trump transition, and the Trump administration. And legally, they're all distinct things. They have their own, like, corporate structures, own, like, corporate entities. So they are separate legal entities for purpose of investigation. And during the transition, at times, the Trump people were using government emails. It was like GSA.gov, and they used those emails to communicate about the transition and talk about, transition stuff. And it turns out that Mueller had obtained copies of these emails. So the Trump transition team, through this attorney, argued that this was somehow a violation of the Constitution for reasons they never really got into. And Mueller's bad. How dare he spy on me and take my emails on a government server? It was not very clear what they're trying to argue. That hasn't really come up publicly again since then, but I could see it in the future being the basis of some kind of misconduct claim against Mueller. But it's not going to fly either, because there's no way that Mueller just, like, forgot about the Fourth Amendment.
But let me ask you, Susan, who makes the determination that any of these reasons would satisfy the regulations on this? Like, Congress? Like, who decides that, okay, yeah, I think this does meet the bar? Whoever fires him makes the determination. And how?
Right now, Rod Rosenstein.
Okay, so let's say he makes a determination. It's totally hokey. How can that be challenged? Can Mueller challenge it?
Lawsuit,
got it.
And that's when it goes to Supreme Court and we find out. I mean, that could get really, it will get really dicey. It's unclear what would happen to the investigation, to the Republic.
this has never been happening. It's never happened before.
This whole situation better off avoided. And so far, Trump has avoided it. He has not pulled the trigger. He is too scared to do this, or rather, the people around him are too scared to do it because they know the danger it would cause. And Republicans are mostly silent. They're not really eager to talk about it. But it was kind of, I don't want to say encouraging, because it's like not even like the lowest bar they've passed. Like they're still below a passing grade. But a few Republicans who have been pretty in the tank for Trump did make sort of lukewarm statements saying, let Mueller do his job. He's a good guy. We don't need to bother him right now. Which isn't really a ringing endorsement of like being opposed to his firing, but they're also not encouraging Trump to go down his path. Oh, and do you see the quote from Trump in one of his whatever bonker interview of the week we had this week, our article, where he...
Oh, which one?
So one of the bonkers quotes from him, from some article, was about how he was upset that they were not just investigating Russian collusion. They were now upset or look... Sorry. They were now investigating him for, quote, fighting back against investigation.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah, which like
he doesn't understand how obstruction works.
It's like baby learning, like baby's first steps in obstruction of justice. He's been learning slowly what it means and what it is. And
just has operated in a whole different world, like just like a thug, you know what I mean? Like a gang. He has no idea how the rule of law works.
Like he thinks what he's doing is fighting back against investigations, opposed to the fact that like you're supposed to let justice do its job. It's your like government. You're not trying to like stop it from functioning, except you are. I mean, it's so ridiculous. This whole conversation feels stupid and inane because, of course, he obstructed justice. Of course, he's trying to underrule rule of law. It's not even debatable at this point. There's no universe in which you can conclude reasonably that he is not attempting to obstruct justice, unless you're arguing he's just too stupid, or as the Senator Manchin put it today, it's just New York talk.
It's just New York talk. Wow. Locker room talk, New York talk. It's amazing
talk,
the number of passes he gets. Yeah. All right.
So, but it really, it's clear that this whole pattern of trying to undermine the FBI, I mean, it's all Trump's been doing. And we also found out, I don't know when, it all blurs together, but we found out that when he first talked to McCabe, Andrew McCabe, at some point shortly after Comey was fired, he had decided to ask McCabe who he voted for in the election.
He just doesn't get it. I mean, I think stupidity might actually be a defense here. It might work.
Well, it is, except it's not entirely because, well, if you go back to his tweets from June of 2017, he was all over the whole obstruction thing and trying to explain what it was, where it came from. It's clear that people have tried to talk to him, explain to him what it is. And he has like a basic, very like initial grasp of the whole concept.
It shouldn't be that complicated, Susan.
But he's just fighting back. Someone's trying to like do something that hurts him, so why wouldn't he fight back against it? Like, it's really weird that he suggests he shouldn't fight back against it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the state of our country. He has absolutely obstructed justice. That's but you know, it's a bigger pattern here. It's in the worst parts expand beyond Trump. We're not just dealing with Trump attacking FBI, Trump tweeting all the time. And, you know, so when the whole McCabe story came out, I was a little bit surprised that there was such a reaction to it because people were upset and like, oh, my God, he asked McCabe who he voted for. Right. And by the way, McCabe did not vote in the general election, but he did vote in the Republican primary because he is not a Democrat.
Interesting.
But like Trump has said such terrible things about McCabe on Twitter. It almost was like, wait, really? You're going to care? He asked a question about like who he voted for, when for the past 6 months he has gone on Twitter like a half dozen times and accused him of being corrupt, accused him of like using his wife to accept corrupt funds, of like, you know, being biased and like using his job for political ends. He's said really horrible things about McCabe and no one like really blinks, like, oh, it's just Trump on Twitter. And then we have a report of him asking McCabe in person who he voted for, and suddenly I was horrified, which is great. I don't want to suggest they shouldn't be, because they really ought to be horrified, and I'm glad that we can still react. But it was kind of a weird disconnect for me, because after seeing all the terrible stuff that he says, I guess I thought people would be more immune to it. So, it's a good sign they weren't.
I guess, you know, it is true. I think every time we slap our forehead, it means we're still awake and alive. We haven't completely...
when we stop being shocked by that, we start going like, oh, he's previously attacked McCabe other times. Let's not be shocked this time. That's when it's over.
Yeah.
So
So there's a new Memogate. Not new, but
Memogate. Oh my God. Yeah, and this is the problem, is that if it was just Trump, it'd be terrible, but it's not just Trump. The GOP has joined in this war on the FBI.
Totally.
Which is horrifying. I don't know, how do we stop this? How do we, in the future, get past what's going on here?
Well, explain, like, what this memo is, what I'm referring to, because...
No one knows.
It's no one knows, right? But there is a secret memo.
So here's what we know. The secret memo, which spawned the hashtag release the memo, and has been dominating Twitter conversations in, like, the far right sphere for the past whatever. It's a memo written by Devin Nunes. Who recused himself from the Russian investigation. He's the chairman of the House, Select Permit Committee on Intelligence, which means he has access to a lot of intel that others in Congress and Senate don't have. But after the whole unmasking controversy that happened back in, I don't know, I've lost all sense of time, May, April of last year, he recused himself, quote unquote. I'm making air quotes in the air. Can't see it. Because he didn't. He's still been involved the whole time. And now he's come in and he has reviewed, allegedly, some of this intelligence from the DOJ and FBI, and wrote a memo about all the shocking bad things that happened that proved the FBI is corrupt and out to get Trump. That was what we knew at first. We didn't really know what the memo actually said or, like, what it was about. But he then made it available to everyone else in the House. It's based on, top secret, or I think. It's based on classified source information, so they cannot release the underlying data.
Okay, so here's my question about this memo. So the theory is that Nunes could see, why did the other House members need the memo? Could they not access the source documents?
They could not. And Nunes himself can't access them all, but he does have more access than the rest of them do.
Got it.
Adam Schiff, the minority.
The ranking folks, okay.
Yeah. He can as well, but most people in Senate too. This is a very restricted group of people can see it. But he made this memo which summarized some of the information available to the rest of the House. And apparently, and this is what we know so far, is that it's... So according to people who read it in the House, it's like bigger than Watergate. It's going to end the Clinton presidency once and for all.
Once and for all. Bring her down on her knees. If Judge Jeanine Pirro doesn't find her first and get her first, I don't know if you've been following that.
I swear to God, this is probably the fourth or fifth time that Fox had a segment of them, going to Chappaquiddick and walking in the woods trying to find Hillary.
Right, right.
It's crazy.
She was talking to chipmunks or some shit. Have you seen
it's
Hillary
insane.
Clinton? All right.
But anyway, so this memo was read by the House people, and they were all we're going on Twitter and talking about how insane and bad and horrible it was and how it proves all this bad stuff of a non-specific variety happened. So this went on for a while. It was really boring, so no one knows what the hell it's about. We have finally started getting leaks as just what the contents of the memo may have been. In particular, it looks like it mostly focuses on everyone's favorite person of all time, Carter Page.
Carter Page, we love him.
It's hard not to kind of appreciate his role. I mean, he's...
adorable.
That's not the wrong word.
Okay. There's something endearingly ridiculous about him.
What do you call, traitorous... incompetence.
But I don't know why. It's hard to dislike the guy. He's so... He is like a child.
He's like a child. He just is. And he's a doing very... Tater. He's involved in very... stuff way over his head. His motives are not good in any sense of the word. But it's hard to hate him or feel like... he's just so...
He's so bad at it. That's what it is.
It's like the Disney villain sidekick. Mm-hmm. It's like Iago from Aladdin. The parrot's not a good thing. It's trying to do bad things, but you don't hate Iago.
You don't hate him.
So here is what we know, or think we know so far. The memo, drafted by Republican House Intelligence Committee staffers, has become a cause celebre in conservative media and on Twitter, where its most active cheerleaders include one of the president's sons, Donald Trump Jr., who, by the way, side note, is definitely tweeting all the time about this and has no idea what he's doing. It continues, it alleges that FBI agents seeking a fall 2016 warrant to surveil Trump campaign advisor Carter Page concealed the role that a controversial private dossier alleging criminal influence over Trump played in their decision, according to sources who have read it. So, yeah.
Well, why would that even be a problem?
This has been their holy grail for a while now. It's proof that somehow the Steele dossier was used to get a FISA warrant, and then somehow that equals... Really
well, why would that
things.
Be a problem? I am now going to, this is the Trump doctrine. No, it didn't happen. Okay, so it did. So what? So what? Like, why is this so nefarious? Yeah, let's say the FBI got, like, some really great intel. They're like, okay, we're going to use this to get a FISA warrant. Like, that's what intelligence does. So what?
Well, the sealed dossier, it's not government-produced material. It's private-produced material from a political person, Hillary Clinton's campaign. So the sort of implication they want to make is that, like, it's wrong. Like, it'd somehow be, like, a conspiracy between Clinton and the FBI if it got used, I guess. And again, like, I'm not suggesting that the Steele dossier should be treated the same as, like, government-based information. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't. But we have no idea if it was or was not at this point. What we think we know is that there was a FISA warrant obtained on Carter Page, or as Carter Page likes to call it, an illegitimate FISA kangaroo warrant. Sorry. An illegitimate FISA kangaroo court warrant, which was obtained, we think, in September of 2016, after Carter Page left the Trump campaign, or supposedly left the Trump campaign. And it now seems like whatever this memo is from Nunes, it suggests that as in obtaining that FISA warrant, you know, the application, the affidavit from whoever it was says, we have reason to believe that this guy is a foreign agent who is, you know, and he, we have intel showing that he traveled to Moscow on July 7th to talk about buying shares in a Russian gas company. Who knows? We have not seen the memo. We have definitely not seen the underlying FISA warrant. So we don't actually know how it might have been used. But that's enough for Republicans. The fact that it may have been cited is proof of some grand conspiracy. And I can't fill in the blanks here. I have been trying to figure out how this is actually a bad thing, like you're saying.
Right.
And it's hard to put together because there are ways that using private intelligence from a political party would be problematic and concerning.
If that private intelligence was corroborated, it wasn't the only source of intelligence. There were like governments all across the world that were providing intelligence to the United States. That there is some crazy crap going on from Israel to the UK to I don't even know where else. I mean,
yeah,
Germany.
Well, we also
I think.
Know, apparently, one thing we do know was cited in the FISA warrant for Carter Page. The warrant application pointed out that in 2013, a Russian spy had, in fact, attempted to recruit Carter Page to be an agent. In fact, this was not the first FISA warrant in Carter Page. They got one in 2014 because he had been recruited before to be a Russian agent.
Oh my God.
And they had, in that application, they had wiretaps from the Russians talking about him and his eagerness to, you know, be used by them. And they basically call him an idiot. No, not basically.
Eagerness to be
idiot.
Used by them.
They call him an idiot. They're like, he travels to Moscow more than I do. Mm-hmm. Like, what the hell is he up to? Like, I don't know, he's an idiot. Just play him some more and whatever. Like, he was a possibly, vaguely, minorly useful idiot. So that they tolerated him and talked to him on the off chance, like he could be a maybe useful idiot.
Right.
But he just always stayed an idiot. He was always an idiot to them. That's it.
So now you have the president's like also release the memo, unleash the memo, whatever, and they can't do it though, right? Because based on classified sources, is that a problem?
They could, and they're probably trying to, and it'll probably come out at some point. I'm sure it'll be the new scandal for like next week, maybe after we talk about. But when it does come out, read it, and whatever it says, ask yourself, why is this a bad thing? And again, like it doesn't, even if like the worst version of it is true.
Right.
I don't know what it says, but it does not imply the existence of the fact that like the FISA warrant used the dossier to get a FISA warrant on Carter Page doesn't imply that the FBI thought that Trump was working with Russians or that the campaign as a whole is working with Russians. It is equally plausible that this happened, that this FISA warrant was obtained because they thought that Carter Page was a Russian agent and that he was trying to infiltrate the Trump campaign.
Right.
It could have been defensive. And they were like, we know Carter Page is the idiot that Russians wanted to recruit back in 2013.
Right.
He's now in the Trump campaign, or was, and is now making like shady trips to Moscow. Trump needs to know if his foreign policy advisor is actually the Russian's idiot. So
the answer is yes. I think like, you know, this is basically the FBI doing its job. This is what it exactly. should be doing in a situation like this. But it's just a distraction, I guess, is what it is.
Yeah. And according to Washington Post earlier, Trump wants the memo released because he's told close advisors that the memo is starting to make people realize how the FBI and the Mueller probe are biased against him, and that it could provide him with grounds for either firing or forcing Rosenstein to leave. Trump privately derided Rosenstein as the Democrat from Baltimore. Quote, Rosenstein is not a Democrat. He was appointed as a U.S. attorney in Maryland by President George W. Bush and kept in that post by Barack Obama. Mm. So there's a lot going on in the Senate. And on the one hand, it's tempting to read interesting implications into it because there's a lot that doesn't really add up right. On the other, it's probably just Trump being batshit. But the idea that this somehow shows that the Mueller probe was biased against him, I don't even understand the logic there, because obviously this happened long before Mueller came around, was part of it. It's all campaign stuff. It cannot show in any respect how Mueller could be biased.
I mean, Mueller's ex-FBI. I mean, it's just, I guess, that this is an institution. Right. This is the Glenn Beck theory. This is the Glenn Beck model of, like, you know, connecting dots and leaving people to just throw crap at the wall and people will, you know, Fox will run with it. Sean Hannity runs with it. And so...
It's the Glenn Beckonization of modern U.S. politics.
Yeah.
It's worse than that. It's like the Alex Jonesing of
American Yeah, I think even politics. Glenn Beck is like, what is this crazy shit?
He is. But Glenn Beck got off the crazy train and tried to. I vaguely recall he tried to claim he had some like undiagnosed medical issue that made him crazy. And actually he was not. No. Now he's totally normal. I don't know what happened there. But I'm
never going to forget the chalkboard. Look, that chalkboard traumatized this country. So...
Anyway,
he seems better.
The other part of this crazy statement from Trump is how would it lead to getting evidence to fire Rosenstein? And by the way, that'd be a big deal. There's a great article in Just Security you should read about why firing Rosenstein is possibly a more dangerous move than firing Mueller. Because if Rosenstein's gone, it's easier for Trump to put someone in charge of overseeing the Mueller investigation who will cripple it at every turn. So Mueller's still there. Mueller still seems to be investigating. But behind the scenes, he's actually, like, kneecapped. He can't do much. He cannot actually do what he needs to do to do the job right. Because whoever is supervising him in place of Rosenstein is making sure that he can't do that.
All right. Well, thank you, Susan, for taking us through the latest in the Mueller scandal.
Release the memo.
Right. Oh, by the way, I was going to say, so, you know, this New York Times scoop, and then it was, like, very quickly corroborated by Washington Post, and, like, there's, like, a number of CNN. Sources. Right, so this definitely was leaked by, like, McGahn or somebody, right?
It was, but hold up. We forgot the greatest part of last week.
Oh, what was that?
Hannity.
Oh, Hannity. Yeah, poor guy. He's so angry.
Here's how Hannity reacted to the news that Trump tried to fire Mueller.
Now, tonight, for example, they're trying to change the story. At this hour, the New York Times is trying to distract you. They have a story that Trump wanted Mueller fired sometime last June, and our sources, and I've checked in with many of them, they're not confirming that tonight. And the president's attorney dismissed the story and says, no comment, we're not going there. And how many times has the New York Times and others gotten it wrong? All right, so we have sources tonight just confirming to Ed Henry that, yeah, maybe Donald Trump wanted to fire the special counsel for conflict. Does he not have the right to raise those questions? You know, we'll deal with this tomorrow night. We have a shocking video of the day to bring you, by the way. This footage comes to us from Arizona, where you see that red SUV, high-speed police chase, ultimately the suspect.
It is gold. It is comedy gold. And he was like, let's just go over this car chase now.
The tone, it was perfect. You could not script better comedy than that. Like, yeah, by the way, here's this random car chase.
And I think the day after that is when his Twitter account got somehow disabled. I have no idea what's going on there. Is it back?
I don't know.
I don't think it's back. I think he started a new account that's like an unverified account, and he's just railing about his official account being... And he's saying, and I will not sit down. I don't know, the last time I checked, but it's been a day since I took a look at him because I try to avoid it. Well, I just want to wrap up today's episode with something that we didn't really talk about in depth, but and people might have missed, was Trump actually sat down for a very long interview with Piers Morgan earlier in the week. And I just wanted one quote to end this episode when he was asked about climate change, which, by the way, the entire campaign, when he was campaigning to become president, was never asked about. And this... So Piers Morgan asked him, do you believe in climate change? And this, word for word, is his response. There is a cooling and there is a heating. I mean, look, it used to not be climate change. It used to be global warming, right? That wasn't working too well because it was getting too cold all over the place. The ice caps were going to melt. They were going to be gone by now, but now they're setting records. Now they're at a record level. There are so many things happening. I tell you what I believe in, clear air. I believe in crystal clear, beautiful water. I believe in just having good cleanliness and all.
Tide comes in, tide goes out. You can't explain that.
That's it for this episode of the 45th. Thank you, dear listeners. We will be back in a week. Have a good one.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meetal Thelhan. We have been produced by Long Arc Digital Media, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is @45thpod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. And guess what? You can even leave us a voice message. Call us at 202-670-8345, and you never know, we might just play your message on the air. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.